Welcome back to the Make or Break Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break of moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Kiam, one of the contestants of NBC's Making It. Find out what it's like to share the screen with Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler, as well as his background in furniture and fine woodworking. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. As always, we have another fun one for you this week. Get into some stuff that is a little bit current, especially over on TV. But before we get into our interview with Kiam, I want to first off thank everybody who is supporting the show over on Patreon. Thank you guys so much. If you guys would like to support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/make or break show. You guys can get access to an after show that we are trying to do every week, as well as we are starting to do actually our recordings live. And so you guys get notified when that's going to happen. You can jump in and interact with our guests. And it's a ton of fun. And then another piece of housekeeping before we jump into this, I want to let you guys know that just hit 5,000 followers over on Instagram. And because of that, we're doing a really fun giveaway with some cool companies like Tools Today. You guys can win some bits from prize packs from Rigid to some finish from General Finishes, as well as some a cool doweling set from Rockler. And if you guys would like to enter to win that, if you head over to makeorbreakshop.com/giveaway, you guys can enter to win, and those are actually four different prizes, so your chances for winning will go up, and the contest is actually going to be ending the day after this goes live. So it's going to be ending on Friday the 23rd, so make sure and get your entries in, and then you'll be notified of all of the winners.
Kiam.
Hello.
This is like the foam core of food. It's a very interesting material, right?
I'm making a Colosseum, and there's going to be the arches on the outside.
Awesome.
The original snack stadium, where the snacks were Christians being fed to lions and minotaurs, I believe.
Yeah.
What's your moving part?
The moving part will be a trap door in the sand pit.
Treacherous. If you have a bed of graham cracker crumbs for the soil of your arena, will there be a way to consume those crumbs?
Yeah, I'll have tortilla chips or wavy chips that you can use to scoop up graham cracker crumbs.
Those both sound like gross ideas.
Those are gross ideas. Just before we move on, is there a chance we are grouchy because we're having a little sugar crash right now?
You're having a sugar crash. I'm having meat withdrawal from getting no damn meat.
So that was a quick clip from NBC's Making It. I first heard about the show actually on the Making It podcast with Bob, Dave, and Jimmy DiResta. And they were talking about the fact that Jimmy was on the show, and they had reached out to them just about using their name and all that kind of stuff. And it's been fun watching it this summer. It was definitely different than what I would expect it to be. It's not more of the, I guess, the maker YouTube style that we're used to, or even those projects, but it's more on the kind of crafting, little Etsy focused piece, and it's super lighthearted. Well, actually, I've enjoyed, and it's got Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler, and I'm a massive Parks and Rec fan, so it's just been fun to watch them, and just being a huge fan of Nick and the stuff that he can actually build. But so I'm watching the show, and all these contestants are doing really crazy things. A lot of them are doing stuff with paper. One guy's doing stuff with felt. And then there's this one kid who's got these cool tattoos and these glasses. And he is just building these really cool pieces out of wood. And you can tell he actually has a woodworking background. And so I dive into some of his stuff, and I start coming across his website, A&K Woodworks. And I'm like, man, this guy is really, really good. And so I reached out to Kiam, and I asked him if he wanted to be on this show. And at the time of this recording, I think they're on week four Making It episodes, and he is still in the running. So he is still on the show. And we don't get into how far he goes, but he's doing really well. And Kiam is just a blast. He's got a cool background in fine art. And then we get into the process of him getting on the show, what it was like to film, as well as he's running his own furniture business. And so what that process looks like as well. So without further ado, let's jump into our interview with Kiam. All right, you guys, want to welcome you back to the Make or Break show. We're hanging out with Kiam today, calling in from Portland, even though he is from Austin. We are super excited to have you on, an excellent woodworker. And I know you've probably had a lot of attention here lately because you're one of the contestants still on the show as of the time of this recording over on Making It. And man, I'm excited to chat with you just about your journey into woodworking. But thanks for taking the time and jumping on with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. Well, I would love to get into your background a little bit and how you got into what you're doing now. And so going all the way back, just, I guess, growing up, were you into making? Like, did your parents do it? Like, how'd you get tools in your hands?
Yeah, growing up, I mean, my mom was definitely crafty with, you know, doing small little projects with us when we were kids. She grew up in Vietnam and, you know, didn't really have anything. So she was always making her own toys and clothes and just anything she needed, she would have to make her own. So she, you know, knew a lot of that kind of stuff and showed us a few things. And then my dad was also like a very handy guy. He loved doing a lot of DIY projects around the house. And, you know, he's always fixing things himself, like everything, like plumbing, electrical, construction. And so I was always around that stuff too, growing up.
That's cool. Did you grow up in Vietnam or did they move here before?
They moved here before. I was born in Connecticut.
Okay, so. Cool. Yeah. So were you into like this stuff, like the making side of things, like Legos, like building, like what was that kind of like for you?
Yeah, I was definitely into all that stuff. I feel like one of the first things I, like little building kits that I got was, either Legos or this kit called Steeltech. Uh-huh. And I don't know if they're around anymore, but it was mainly metal. And it would just have little metal strips with holes
in it.
And then it would come with like little bolts and nuts and you could just kind of arrange them and, you know, build little metal pieces. And I remember building like this little car without any instructions as a kid. And, you know, I designed it all myself and I was super proud of it. And I think it's still put together somewhere at my parents' house.
Oh, really? That's cool. Were they like metal rods? Is that what they, I'm trying to remember, because I think I had something like that.
Yeah, there was all sorts of stuff. There were like, the rods and then little wheels you can put on and like just the metal pieces were all pre-cut sizes. So you could just kind of mix and match. And I mean, it was similar to Legos in a way, you know, just building things. But
Yeah. Was there a certain like type of stuff that you liked working on? Like, was it vehicles, cars, or did you just kind of just make whatever?
I think just whatever at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, I was the exact same. I still remember building like a massive like pirate ship just out of Legos and like I kept remaking it over and over again. I don't know why. It wasn't even that good, but that's cool. It's funny the metal pieces. We've had a couple people mention that they really got into that like outside of just doing Legos. Which is cool. But in, in high school, did you guys have shop class? Like, did you go to high school in Connecticut?
Yeah, I did. I went to high school in West Hartford and I was always very into art, like growing up and through high school and everything. And at that point I kind of like, I didn't really do anything 3D.
Yeah.
Or even with color really. I just didn't feel very experienced and just wasn't that good at it. And that's kind of when I got into photography too.
Oh, cool.
And I had a little dark room in the shop. And that kind of like really grew on me. And that's when I decided I wanted to go to art school for photography.
Gotcha. Because you got is it a BFA from Massachusetts College of Art and Design? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so it was in photography, like was it like specialized? Is that how that works?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's different majors, but I was going to do photography originally. And then there were, you know, the first year at art school, they kind of want you to try a little bit of everything. just to make sure you know what you like. And that's when I kind of realized I couldn't decide after that. And there's a thing called Open Major, which you kind of have to create your own curriculum and apply for. And I ended up applying to be an Open Major. And that's technically what my degree is in.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and that's when I started to do a little bit more sculptural or just 3D things.
Yeah.
And then with woodworking.
Yeah, so how did you get to woodworking from photography?
So in photography, in the photo department, there was a alternative processes class that I got to take.
Okay, cool.
Which is just like, you mainly learn like the old school type of printing.
Yeah.
With the different chemistry and just the way that they used to do it, like when photography was invented. And that's when I learned how to do salt prints, which is just basically like coating a piece of paper with silver nitrate and then and a salt mixture and then developing it because silver nitrate is photosensitive. And then I realized that, well, it became like almost an object at that point. And then you could also size like different materials, not just paper. You could do wood or just objects too. And so I wanted to, my original idea was just kind of try to print onto 3D objects.
Gotcha.
And kind of create photo sculptures. And then it ended up kind of moving towards like building cases for these little photographs that I kind of saw as objects. And eventually just turned into all woodworking.
That's cool. So what, when you were doing photo, was there a specific thing that like drew you, like a certain subject or topic, or was it just the medium in itself that you really enjoyed?
I think it was the medium itself. I definitely did a lot of portraiture and landscape stuff and still life and, but everything was very like project based.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the woodworking is almost more of a necessity, or just like, I want to like display these pictures, so I'm going to make my own frames and boxes and stuff.
Yeah, I guess in a way. Yeah.
So what, when did you really start to enjoy the woodworking piece? Was it like right off the bat? Like, oh, like I really enjoy this aspect of like art as well.
It wasn't until my last year at MassArt actually, which I wish I had tried woodworking earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have a pretty awesome wood shop there, and just, I mean, all the departments there are amazing. They have so much stuff you can play with. But yeah, it wasn't until, yeah, the last year of MassArt.
Gotcha. That's cool. So you graduate. And then is your next step to do like woodworking more full time? Like what was kind of your next step after college?
After college I was working at a frame shop, like picture frames. And almost everyone that I worked with also went to MassArt actually. And so it was fun just being around other artists and talking about, you know, different things that everyone was working on. And it was kind of my first, woodworking job, like in quotes, where I got to cut frames for a living, basically.
Yeah.
And then my Amanda, who was my girlfriend at the time, we kind of just wanted to try something new and move somewhere. Boston was getting really expensive. And so we had learned a lot about Austin. So we ended up just packing up our car, moving to Austin.
Did you have like anything lined up, or was it literally like, well, let's just go to Austin?
We didn't have anything lined up. We just, packed up our car and moved. We had a friend that was living in Austin.
Okay.
And we stayed with them until we found a place to live and jobs. And my first job there was at a cabinet shop.
Okay.
It was kind of a large operation. It was mainly, I was kind of like a machine operator almost.
Okay.
They I was just cutting stiles and rails for cabinet doors.
Yeah. Was it like CNC stuff or was it like actual table saw and everything?
No, it was like table saws. Okay. And I just, it was a big operation. We would turn out like from start to finish, like, I don't know, maybe 30 orders a day, jeez, which is insane because they had like crazy equipment where, you know, to glue up panels, you know, you have to let the glue dry,
right,
and that takes you're supposed to let it sit for like 24 hours, but they had, I don't know exactly what it was. It was some sort of like radio frequency, crazy press dryer thing that would dry the glue in 30 seconds.
That's crazy.
So you get a full panel. Yeah. And then it would go through the entire process and it was kind of insane.
So it was like a full, like assembly line, like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So were you also building out like your own shop on the side? Like, were you still doing your own kind of projects in addition to the day job?
Yeah. It wasn't until we moved to Austin that like we were able to find more maker spaces available for people that were, you know, just affordable too. So I was able to find, you know, rent some space and just do it on the side. And, you know, when we moved, we didn't have any of our furniture or anything. We just kind of had our clothes and cameras and computers and stuff. And so when we got our apartment, we just didn't have anything. And instead of going out to buy stuff, we wanted to try to make it since we had that space available. So started making our own furniture.
Cool. So the almost like out of necessity is what drew you to furniture, it sounds like.
Yeah. And just having the option, like we didn't have anything. So it was cool. Like, you know, if we already had like a coffee table and TV stand or something, I probably wouldn't have started making those pieces first.
So did, were you doing, like, I know, like, especially for me, like when I started doing furniture, it was like pocket hole, like using just like the stuff I could get like Home Depot or Lowe's. It was especially a lot of like patio stuff just out of 2x4s. Like, was that the type of stuff you were doing? But or was because you've had this background, like you're able to go more of the fine furniture out to start out?
I went straight into more of the fine stuff just because I hadn't had too much. I didn't really have a chance to do it before as much. And it's something I had been thinking about for a long time at that point. And, you know, since then since we had the opportunity, just, you know, with the shop space available and I was able to, there's a bunch of like really awesome lumber yards in Austin that have like really nice wood. So, you know, just decided to buy nicer wood and just try to really make it beautiful.
Yeah. So, especially when I'm looking through your stuff over on your website, and I think a couple people are asking, so it's akwoodanddesign.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of it seems it's more of kind of the mid-century modern style. And there's some like some super cool, like Japanese influence to it. Has that always been something you've been drawn to just as a, like an aesthetic, in the stuff that you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the first woodworkers I like learned about was George Nakashima, and he's still one of my biggest influences.
Yeah.
I just really love that style. Also, one of the things one of my woodshop teachers told us was like the importance of the way a piece of furniture, like, or an object makes contact with the ground and how it sits. And, I feel like that's something I always take into consideration too. And with mid-century and Japanese style furniture, that's something I really appreciate and take notice.
Yeah. So when did you guys go to, are you full-time through your woodshop, like in designing furniture? Is that what you guys are doing? Or are you still doing stuff part-time?
I work part-time with another shop right now, but it's just like one day a week.
Gotcha.
But since the show is out, I'm looking to do it full time again. I was for 3 years, but then kind of wanted to slow it down a bit.
What was it like running your own business, like, and jumping into that?
Yeah. Cause when, I mean, we're able to do it full time. It's just, we would have to take on every order and a lot of it's custom stuff. And yeah. I don't want to be just a builder. Right, I want to design my own stuff too and just sell that. So having the ability to, you know, turn down a job or something is nice.
Yeah. Were there any like hurdles or things you guys ran into that you just didn't expect going into that route, like making like custom stuff and running your own shop?
I guess the biggest things were like capacity and just being able to take on larger projects right. that sound fun. I mean, still we're kind of limited to, you know, home things or residential things. We're starting to do smaller things for restaurants and stuff like that,
oh, cool.
which is a lot of fun.
Is it you and your wife? Is it just you two?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is your wife also a woodworker?
No, she's not. We met at Mass Art though through photography.
Okay.
So she does a lot of photo and video work, and she helps out a lot with finishing the smaller items that we do too.
Gotcha. Cool. Very cool. Yeah. That's not. So you said you're trying to get more into that. It sounds like full time now from because of the show.
Yeah, kind of try to take advantage of the exposure.
Yeah. That's cool. So switching gears a little bit to the show, and that's where I definitely first saw your stuff show up over. If you guys haven't watched over on NBC, Making It, I guess what the third week came out 2 days ago. At the time of this recording, this is August the 16th. But so what was that process like? Like, did you just see like a casting call and then you pitched it, or like how'd you hear that was? Because you guys filmed last fall, is that right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right. We didn't know about the show until a casting producer reached out to A&K. They just emailed and let us know about an open casting call that they were doing in Austin and asked us if we wanted to come out and do an in-person interview. And we were just amazed that we got that email, and they told us that Nick and Amy were going to be the hosts.
Yeah.
And, you know, we love Nick and Amy, so we definitely wanted to do it, but we just kind of immediately thought, like, what are the chances of us actually even able to, like, make it through the casting process? And the day of, we just kind of, we didn't decide until the day of to go, and I'm really happy we did, so.
Like, to the actual casting call, you didn't decide?
Yeah, okay. So... I mean, yeah, we ended up going together and applying together just because they had emailed our business.
Right.
And they didn't specify if, you know, they just wanted one of us or not. And at that point, too, it was still really early on in the casting process. So they weren't sure. So they let us apply as a team. And eventually we got a call back and they just said that it would just be individual contestants, but we could both move forward if we wanted. And that's when Amanda just kind of decided to not move forward.
Yeah.
And go home. So
that's cool. Yeah. Was there, so you said it was an open, or not open, but like, were there a lot of people at the casting call? Like when you went, like, was it a certain specific time you guys were supposed to go?
It was open. So there were a lot of other people there. We actually, they did it in groups. So we kind of sat in a group with other people and we kind of just went around the circle kind of talking about what we do and, you know, stuff like that.
So were they just like literally just looking at businesses or people like online and asking them like to come in? Like, I didn't realize it was just like almost like a cold call to you to come to the casting.
Yeah, I guess they must have, you know, I'm sure they saw us on Instagram or something. And yeah, they must have reached out to a bunch of people. But I know a lot of people submitted like video interviews or video submissions. Yeah.
So you guys do it and you hear back that you're going to have to split. And so she was your fiance at that time, right? You guys weren't married? Or when did you guys get married?
Yeah, we got married after the show.
Okay.
She was my fiance at the time. Yeah.
Gotcha. So how long was it until you got, like, did you get a call? Did you get an email? Like, how'd you find out you'd be on the show? Or were there more like rounds of interviews and stuff?
Sorry, what was that last question?
Were there more like rounds of interviews and stuff? Or was it, you just got a call one day that if asking you to be on it?
Yeah, it was kind of a long process, actually. They would call back every month, maybe.
Okay.
And there was just a bunch of different stages that they were going through just because of all the applicants.
Gotcha. So how long was that process? Like when was that casting call, the first one?
It was probably about 3 or 4 months total.
Okay.
I think it was around April when we went to that first interview.
Gotcha. That's cool. So how did you find out that you'd be on it?
It was kind of crazy. It wasn't until a few days before we needed to fly out that they were going to make the decision.
Oh, see?
And they told us that it would be last minute sort of thing. Not last minute, but just towards the end.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So did you...
Just because there were so many people that they were going through and they just wanted to make sure they were going to pick the right people, I guess.
So did you know that you were... Like you'd gotten pretty far, like there was a pretty good chance you're going to come on, or was it a surprise when you found out that you'd be on the show?
I knew I was getting close just because they had told us like kind of the timeline of when they were going to want to film. So since it was getting so close to that deadline, I knew I was one of the last people.
That's crazy. What was it like? Was it a phone call? Was it an email when you found out?
It was a phone call. It was crazy. I mean, it was one of the craziest experiences of my life,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, so you get the phone call, and then it's just a few days, and you guys are flying out to, is it LA that you guys filmed, or somewhere around there?
Yeah, just outside of LA.
So it was just a couple days, and you guys are out there?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's nuts that it was that quick that it happened. But so what was the how has the experience been looking back on it? Like, you don't have to say like how far you got, all that kind of stuff, but like going into it, was it what you thought it would be with the way it was described?
It was so much better than I
really
thought it
okay
would be.
Gotcha.
I mean, I thought it would be amazing, and it was even better than that. You know, it's a competition show, and it was just a little bit nerve wracking just because you kind of have an idea of what to expect with a competition show.
Yeah.
But since, you know, meeting the contestants, it was just crazy how nice everyone was, and we all kind of hit it off really quickly, and we still are all friends now. That's and cool. We talk every day, actually.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That was something I really like, especially watching that first episode, because most of the competitions shows, at least it feels like the people are like attacking each other a little bit, or like a little bit aggressive, and you guys are like so like just nice, like, oh, that's cool, like that's the, like I wish I could do that, that's cool. So as far as the actual filming, and if people haven't watched it, you guys do basically two competitions in each show. Is that all one day that you guys are doing that, or is that split up like each episode?
Yeah, it is split up just because it's a 3-hour challenge for the short one, and then the long one is between 12 and or 10 and 13 hours.
Oh, okay, gotcha. The long one, so that's a lot longer than I guess I thought it was watching it. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So when you get there and you guys are getting the challenges, like, do you guys have an idea of this is what's coming, or when they're telling you what it is that the first time you're hearing it and you're having to come up with something on the spot?
You definitely don't know if there's going to be some sort of like twist. So
okay,
that's kind of the biggest challenge, I guess.
Yeah. 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 Cause I felt like some of your stuff, even I guess the episode a couple nights ago when you were building the outdoor, like the movie, I guess the outdoor theater almost.
Yeah.
And I was like, these guys are going to have like lots of supplies, like at least either there's a massive warehouse around somewhere that they're pulling it from, or they have a ballpark of what these guys are going to be working on. which is cool.
Yeah, that was great. I feel like I work best too, just kind of having an idea of what's available to me, just so I kind of have in my mind like what I can do if I need like a backup plan or something.
Yeah. So what is it like building like under the cameras versus like when you're in your own shop working on furniture? Like, do you still kind of find yourself getting the same flow, or is it just totally different with all the people around?
I expected it to be completely different.
Really? Okay.
The first time we got on set, I'd never been on any sort of set before, and was kind of starstruck too with, you know, everything that was going on all the cameras. It was ended up being kind of, you just kind of get into the zone and just kind of ignore the cameras altogether. And since it was all timed, you don't really have a choice in a way.
Yeah.
You just kind of are really focused in on your project. So you kind of don't even see what else is going on around you.
Yeah. That's cool. So, as you are working on the projects, like, is there a clock that you're watching? Like, do you have, like, how do you know when?
Yeah, there's a little clock. But I don't know if it helps or not. I guess it does in the end, but it's just watching it tick down. It's just kind of, especially when it gets to like the last like 15 minutes and you feel like you have so much left to do. Yeah. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah. So what was it like with Nick and Amy there?
They were amazing. They're exactly like what anyone would expect in real life.
Yeah.
They just are so friendly and easy to talk to and hilarious.
Yeah. I first saw them on Parks and Rec, and the first time I watched it through, like, I didn't know Nick Offerman was like a real woodworker. Like, he would just, I was like, oh, like he's like playing the character. And then it wasn't until I got into woodworking later. And I think I was listening to actually the Making It podcast with like Jimmy Duresta, Bob Claggett, and David Picciuto, and Jimmy mentioned Nick, and like I think he came on the show to talk about his woodworking, and I looked him up, like I'm like, oh man, like this guy's for real, like he knows what he's doing. And I've gotten to meet him a couple times at woodworking stuff, and he seems like just the nicest guy out there. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah, he is super cool.
Yeah,
I didn't know he was a woodworker either in real life until, you know, after Parks and Rec.
Yeah. He's so much fun. So. Another fun thing, at least for a lot of the people that are listening, they're like super familiar with Jimmy Duresta, who's like the shop master, who's had like, I guess, a couple clips. You kind of see him every now and then on the show. But like, were you guys able to interact much in the actual like building process, or is he more just there kind of like, hey, if you need help, like I can help you cut this or give you this tip or something?
Yeah, that was more of his role. But we definitely got to interact a lot and talk a lot about just general, you know, what making and woodworking.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know who he was before getting there. And I'm so happy I got to meet him. He's an awesome guy. He has so many tips and stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah. He's super nice. He's like one of the most genuine people I've ever like talked to.
So absolutely.
He's super open. All right. So, when I was first watching the show, I guess what I didn't realize it was more, not in a negative way, but more on like the crafting side of things, like more of some of the Etsy stuff that you see. And so I was like, okay, these guys are doing like paper craft and felt, and this is cool. And then, I think your first thing, you're power sanding like a turtle, like out of wood. And then you build this like super intricate, woodwork, like Japanese inspired stuff. I'm like, oh man, he's more on the woodworking side of things. Did you guys see or find that you had like really different skill sets, or you came from like different backgrounds with the other like contestants?
Yeah, we all definitely have very different aesthetics and, you know, mediums that we work with. That was kind of like a hard thing for me to try to figure out too while I was on the show, just because I am coming from a side where I try to spend, you know, weeks on a piece on one piece, and being on a competition show that's timed for like hours, it's just a huge, you know, difference obviously. And it was kind of a balance I had to find of what I could actually get done.
Did you, like find yourself like cringing a little bit when you're having to cut some of the corners versus like taking 5 hours to lay out like lines for dovetails and like hand cutting everything. Like, is that hard for you because you are able to build like really fine furniture?
Yeah. I mean, it was harder just trying to think about a project differently because you know, you don't have time to glue something.
Right.
So everything I had to make was just, you know, I had to design around the time frame, which was new to me. But it was a good experience.
Yeah, that's cool. Definitely. Well, sweet. Well, man, I appreciate your time and jumping on and chatting with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
as far as if people do want to check you out, especially the stuff that you're doing, is the website, is that the best place you'd send them?
Yeah, the website or the Instagram.
Or Instagram. And what's the Instagram?
It's also AK Wood and Design.
AK Wood and Design. Cool. Well, man, well, I'm looking forward to at least watching you for another week on the show at the time of this recording.
Yeah.
And I hope to see you all the way to the very end. But cool, man. Well, thank you so much. It was a blast chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you. It was great.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for hanging around to the end. This is where I give you guys a quick update on the things that I've got going in my own shop. I have been promising it for a little while, but I've been working on a video on how I am creating some signs with my CNC to sell over on Etsy. And so they are two different colors and they're actually football stadiums. So those are carved out and then I paint them white and the whole thing is stained. And so I've had a lot of questions on kind of what that process looks like. So I thought I'd put together what I thought was a pretty quick video, but turned out to be a little bit longer. But when you guys hear this, it should be live or live within the day. So I encourage you guys to check that out if you're looking at making signs, especially if you have a CNC, some tips that have been helpful for me, hopefully helpful for you guys. And then kind of go into that same vein. So I'm starting to ship these out. I'm selling these on Etsy. And I want to be able to have my logo on the, it's kind of like butcher paper that we wrap it all up in. And so I'm going to be making a stamp. And so cutting that out of some rubber. I've got some ink and then probably turning the handle on the lathe. And so that will probably be the next project video coming out in about a week. So I'm trying to step up, especially my YouTube game. I really love making videos in addition to doing these podcasts. And so I just need to be building projects to video. But I'd love to know, as always, what you guys are working on. Be sure and hit me up over on Instagram at the Make or Break Shop. I would love to feature you guys in an upcoming episode if you have a really cool project. And just as always, I'd love just to see what you guys are doing. So hope you guys are doing amazing. And until next time, go make or break something in a shop. See you guys.